powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
I knew this was going to turn into a week of worrying.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Just from that game?
Because you knew that would happen? The other day. Thank God this is a
Maybe
year.
It's a week of wonder because I decorated the sports pit.
You did a very nice job. Unfortunately, nobody can see that right now. Maybe we'll tweet out some pictures of it later.
We should. Howdy and Lydia helped. Everything looked great.
It did look terrific. It got candy canes on the wall. So good job by Stacy. thank God this isn't another year where we're going 10-5-1 or 10-6, where, you know, six of these weeks we got to come in on a Monday and rehash another close loss. This is a very good year, no matter how it ends. Well, I guess we got a couple games to go. We could still end up 10-6. But I don't think it's going to turn out that way. I think that this year, 2019, will be remembered above the last handful of years anyway. But when you watch a loss, I'm not going to speak for everybody, but the thing that I start wondering about is, okay, going forward here, we got a couple of games to go before the playoffs. What's fixable? Mm-hmm. What isn't? What have we looked at all year long that has gone unchanged that by now you reach the conclusion that, you know what, it may even be fixable, but it's probably not going to happen. On the other hand, what can we actually make a correction to?
Yeah.
Right? Pre-snap penalties, things like that. We've got all this stuff. Like in 2017, there came a point, and maybe even 2016, there came a point very quickly where we all accepted, all right, this offensive line just is not protecting Russell Wilson at all. Mm. It's not happening. Like, don't even pretend that that's coming. Russell's going to have to run for his life. He's going to have to make every play on his own. That's just the way it is. Thankfully, that's no longer the case. And I don't think that if you look at each position group, each little sort of sub-situation that they're in here, that there are really many things that you can point to and say, man, that's just going to be brutal the rest of the year. I don't think so. Off the top of your heads, what do you guys think?
Well, the one that comes to my mind right away is the pass rush, right?
For like, fixable or for not fixable?
For is it fixable or not? That's the question, right? Is it fixable or is it not? And you have to look at the pass rush because you've seen them be absolutely abysmal early on. You saw them turn a new leaf that they were actually getting after the passer, that you got contributions not just from Jadeveon Clowney, but you were getting contribution from Ziggy Ansah, Rasheem Green, Jaron Reed, Puna Ford. The whole collective group was actually stepping up. And then in this last game, it was non-existent. I believe that that part of it is fixable. I think that just tailored off of the matchup that they had against the Rams, I think it hurt their performance, and I think that they're more close to that. But as I talked yesterday, they've got to play more aggressive. The defense as a whole has to be called a little bit more aggressively, not being concerned to throw out a blitz every now and then along with your defensive line in that pass rush. I do think that they're going to get better. I think that's fixable.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ones that I come back to, too, and I lean toward not fixable, but then I think the same thing you did, where I'm like, well, if you would have asked me in week 10, is the Seahawks defense fixable? I'd say, well, we got into week 10.
The defense or the pass rush?
The pass rush.
Okay.
You got into week 10, and you haven't seen what you thought you'd see, so I'd say no. And instead, starting with week 10, they had a streak of three games where they were the best they'd ever looked. First, it was with Jadeveon Clowney having one of his best games as a pro, the most dominant game by an edge rusher maybe I've seen at least this year. And then you had the following week when he was out, you had Ziggy Ansah, you had Rasheem Green. Shaquille Griffin, meanwhile, through all of this, and Quandre Diggs were making big impacts in the secondary. Trey Flowers had, I think, a pair of picks during that time. So then you thought, well, maybe that is fixed. I don't know how they did it, but they fixed it. So them having done it before makes it hard to say you can't. But that's where my greatest amount of doubt is.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. Wouldn't this problem be so much easier to diagnose if they had only had just the one good defensive performance as opposed to three?
Because then you think it was flukish.
Exactly. you could just look at it and be like, all right, well, Jadeveon Clowney stepped up. He had one of these games that his physical talents, you know,
even
allow
then
him to have.
Even then, I'd right. be confused because you'd still be looking at it. Even if they would have never taken a step forward in those three games, even now, I'd be wondering what's wrong with this defense and would have a really hard time accepting that it just wasn't clicking with all of the big players that you have in that front seven, especially. I'd yeah. still be wondering what was wrong.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. It's not a talent issue. I really believe that, along with you, Stacey, that it isn't a talent issue. Defensive line, there are, in terms of edge rushers, to me, there is talent deficiency. You got Jadeveon Clowney, Ziggy Ansah, you have no idea what his health is like. And then outside of that, you got Brandon Jackson, LJ Collier, who is a consistent, healthy scratch, and Quentin Jefferson, who's a good football player, but not a pass rusher. So they're talent deficient there, but as a whole, run stuffing, you know, all around defense, I do think that they have the talent, and so it is peculiar to see them struggle as mightily as they have at different points in time. I also look at the offense. And particularly when I look at the offense as a whole, I come back to this thought process that after the 49er game, Russell Wilson was on a string of a run in terms of, you know, great performances, pass rating over 115 consistently. And then since then, his next best performance has been the Minnesota game where he was 98.9. He would have been well over 100 if it hadn't been for that flukish yeah. pick. But I look at this offense and I say, all right, it really, what they were doing so well was they were going through Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett. It started there. And then from everything else, it really kind of came together. And you had Chris Carson, the rushing attack, starting to do well. You had DK Metcalf starting to perform well in addition to. And that, to me, is something that this group for the Seahawks, that's what they've got to fix offensively. They've got to get Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett going again to get this offense back on track to where it needs to be. And I know that they've had great rushing performances over the last few weeks, and you can win games like that. But to me, that's more reminiscent of 2018. This offense made a huge leap forward in 2019 into becoming not just a good offense that has a philosophy that works well for them, but becoming truly an elite dynamic offense, and they've kind of backtracked in that aspect.
Coming up in 30 minutes, we're going to hear from Pete Carroll, as we do every week on Wednesday, his weekly press conference. We're going to be joined by Mike Salk at 2. We'll move him to 2 o'clock. He's usually with us at 12:30. You know, as we're discussing this, guys, I wonder if we're looking at this issue the wrong way. When we talk about things that are fixable and unfixable, that implies to me that the Seahawks getting to the Super Bowl is completely contingent on things that are within our control. And I'm not sure that's the case. Mm-hmm. Isn't it fair to just hope that maybe the 49ers lose a game or two? I mentioned that, I mentioned that yesterday. Like, you look around and you look at a team like the Patriots losing and the teams that benefit from that. Like, teams like the Chiefs and the Ravens, like, they all just got help from another source, right? They didn't have to do anything to watch the Patriots lose that game. And I feel like we've been chasing the 49ers the entire year. And because the Seahawks weren't perfect against the Rams on Sunday night, they had one hiccup, and the 49ers went out there and dominated. Here we are in second place looking up again. Like, is that what it's going to come down to? The reason why the Seahawks aren't the one or number or two seed, because of that loss, we're going to go 13-3 as a wild card team. That just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, but that's absolutely how it happens some year. The best team doesn't. This sounds patronizing to say because I know that you know it, but the best team doesn't win the Super Bowl every year. The best team doesn't even get like top seeding all the time. Sometimes you benefit from an easy schedule or from the ball bouncing your way. So,
but 13-3 as a wild card is rare.
It is rare, but that's why I've been saying that I think all Seattle needs to do is just get there, because they've had luck on their side, and you can't fault them for that when really every team does sometimes.
One guy we got to get more out of on the Seahawks. I got three questions next to Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
All right, my first question to you people, Jake and Stacey. why aren't the Seahawks getting more out of Josh Gordon? We made such a big deal about this. All the skills he has, we barely used them.
I guess what you can say, it's not going to make people happy, but you can at least say he's getting more work. He saw his most offensive snaps and his most targets against the Rams last week. That still wasn't a lot, though. That's the thing. He was in for 37 offensive snaps and had 5 targets, which is still less than fans would like to see. But it's at least ratcheting up, right?
Yeah. Can we speak honestly here?
Yeah.
Can we speak honestly?
No, yes, we can. Tom.
No, you must lie.
No, you speak honestly.
Okay. I'm gonna speak my truth here. For Josh Gordon, you wondered about whether he was going to be a problem, if he was going to show up and he was going to be an off-the-field issue and just keep himself active and with his head on straight. He's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
What was his health like coming from the Patriots? So actually, it turns out he's pretty healthy and he's running pretty well. Can he catch the football? Well, he's shown that he can catch the football in critical moments on third down and look pretty dang good doing it. At this point, we got to stop rotating everybody in the game. I'm sorry. Like, I just look at it and I say, all right, Malik Turner, David Moore, Jerron Brown, they're all really good football players, but they're role players, right? And you have Josh Gordon, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett. Those three guys are your playmakers. Those are the guys that you should be constantly keeping on the field and trying to give every single opportunity possible to those three players. And if they need a spell, then let's get them off the field and get David Moore and Malik Turner in there because they're good backups. They're good players that can contribute.
Why aren't they doing it then? That's my question. What do you suppose the reason could be? Do you want to speculate or not?
I'll speculate in the simple fact that they feel confident, every single one of those guys, a little overconfident, and that they're rotating everybody in and everybody's going to play a role on this team and all that. Like, let's be done with that. Let's keep all those guys on the field at all times unless they can't. They need a spell because they need to catch a breather. That should be the way it goes.
That's one of the very few things that straight up annoys me about Pete Carroll is his overconfidence in guys that don't deserve it. Next question.
Number two.
Gerrit Cole was signed to an ungodly amount of money by the Yankees yesterday. 9 years?
Nine years ago. Okay. Curtis, do you even remember what you were doing 9 years ago? That's
That'd
a long time.
2010. I was in college.
Same.
Stop bragging. I was just starting college.
Okay. Same. Ish.
Do you guys think that there's 9 year, $324 million, by the way? Do you guys think that there's a such thing in any sport as an excessive contract? Or are you guys straight up capitalist?
I know.
Get as much money as you can.
I was thinking about this, and I thought, would this seem like an excessive contract if it was for this like generational talent? So for Mike Trout, right, when he signed his contract, is there a point when people think that's too much for one player? We had this question too with Russell Wilson. Although I think the NFL's salary cap and the way that they build it make it a bit different. If it was like baseball, I think you'd have to say, depending on the player, it's hard to say that there is an excessive contract if a player might be the best you might have for that franchise for a time to come. Mike Trout might go down as the best player in franchise history for the Angels. So how do you justify not paying him whatever it takes to keep him?
Because he can't deliver. Well, it depends on what you think you're paying for. Are you paying him that much to return you a championship? Or are you paying him that much just to get people in the seats? Because you...
Well, that's what I wonder.
One baseball player cannot deliver you a championship. You just can't.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm wondering with the Yankees, is this situation just because he's the missing piece, or is it, yeah, we got that money. We know he can draw an audience.
I think that's what it is.
It's part of it, and also, I think when you come to excessive, to me, I think there's absolute stupid deals. And to me, when you look at this headline in terms of the contract, I think it's a stupid deal because I don't think 9 years down the road that one, Gerrit Cole is going to actually finish this contract out, but B, that he would be the same type of performer. Why are we signing him to a 9-year deal at that type of money? Why are you strapping yourself in for that kind of cash for that extended period of time? when the likelihood is that Gerrit Cole is not going to be the same player 9 years.
I think the Yankees just, like,
even 5 years from
like
now.
Kind of like Stacy is saying, the Yankees just wanted to be the Yankees and let the rest of the league know it.
Yeah, I was watching this show the other day where they had a $2,000 cocktail that they were trying. That's the Yankees, where it's like, what are you even paying for? Oh, it's because you have the money. And you're like, yeah, that's right.
It's the vanity of the situation.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
but and also for them, in that situation, though, that somebody... Maybe it's vanity, but also it's not. It's a drop in the bucket to them. What is a $2,000 cocktail for the Yankees? Is that going to put them in a bad financial position like
no.
it would
no,
other
but
franchises?
It makes them look like a jerk.
Sure, sure it does. That's why it's unique. That's why it's a weird, unique situation in baseball versus you know the NFL and the argument against signing big time franchise quarterbacks because you do have a salary cap.
Yeah, you have a salary cap to keep everything in line. I mean, with Gerrit Cole. They could go up against the Astros next year in the same ALCS and get swept. It guarantee not only does it not guarantee you anything, it doesn't come close. I mean, it doesn't even guarantee that they'll make the playoffs. They probably will because they have a bunch of other pieces. But, I mean, this I'm really not sure what they think that they're getting out of this.
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, do they really believe that this is the last piece to the puzzle? That's the question. And like you said, it's not guaranteed, but it's the Yankees. They're gonna put in all that they can to you know make sure that they overpower the American League and try to compete with the Houston Astros because obviously even with as much firepower as they have with their bats, they still needed help with the pitching aspect.
All right, we got one more question. Stacy's going to ask it to me, but we're gonna do it around the corner here in case we have a few minutes before Pete Carroll jumps on the mic. So we'll do that next. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, Pete Carroll's press conference is coming up in just a few minutes. Curtis, you watching for it back there?
Oh, I'm got eyes.
Don't take your eyes off the screen.
You watching for it back there? Let me hear a yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, good. Stacy, you got one more question for me left over from that last segment, by the way?
I do. Tom.
Yeah.
What's the most innocuous playoff loss the Seahawks have had under Pete Carroll?
I was thinking last night about the upcoming opponent in the Carolina Panthers, and it feels like we play them, or we've played them about a dozen times.
Yeah, it feels like they're an honorary NFC West opponent.
Sort of. Them and the Packers, but definitely the Panthers, whether it's regular season or in the playoffs. And I thought back to that loss that they had in 2015 at Carolina. Okay. Now, when I say innocuous loss, what I mean is playoff loss that doesn't feel quite as bad as the others. Right, the worst one obviously being the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
I know the game you're talking about.
Yes. Now, let me give you a couple of reasons. And you tell me if it's an innocuous playoff loss. Okay. Panthers were 15-1. They had the MVP, Cam Newton, at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's two things right there. Seahawks had already been to two straight Super Bowls going into that year. So to ask him to go to a third, I think it's really asking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Going into that game, the Seahawks had just come off a game in which Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal, which would have won the game. That's pretty much the luckiest win in the history of the NFL.
Yes.
That the Seahawks had in Minnesota. Okay. Now, they go to Carolina. They go down 31-0. The game looks like it's going to be a blowout. Then the Seahawks score 24 points unanswered to actually kind of make it close, maybe tease us a little bit. And unfortunately, the game comes down to an onside kick, which the Seahawks couldn't recover. That essentially ends the game. It would have taken a miracle for them to tie up that game after going down 31-0. Now, with all of those things in mind, wouldn't you say that that loss wasn't that bad?
I will say that I don't know how the post-game locker room was because I didn't travel for that game, but during locker room clean-out, which is the final chance you get to talk to players during each season, That one did not feel nearly as uncomfortable as those sometimes feel, because they're kind of a bummer, right? Some guys are leaving for the last time. They're saying goodbye to each other. Other guys are just bummed, because if you're doing locker room cleanout before February, it's because you didn't make it to the Super Bowl. That one was notably, and when you said against Carolina, that's why I knew it immediately, because just tangibly, like, you could feel in the locker room that it was not as, there was more hope after that one. Like, okay, we actually surprised ourselves. We can come back and do this.
Yeah, I would just say that it was a feel-good situation that, obviously, in the first half, it was like, oh my gosh, these guys are getting, you know, absolutely demolished, embarrassed, right, in the playoffs by this group, and then they have that tremendous comeback. It leaves a good taste left in your mouth that, gosh, if we had more minutes on the clock,
if we had like one more minute,
we would have won the game, right? That's what you could come away and talk. You're still disappointed. It's still frustrating, and you're still not able to obtain your goals. But yeah, you can have that narrative in that conversation, and it's a lot easier to stomach than anything else. I think for Seahawks fans, you had a moment where you were excited, you were into the game, it was fun there for the second half, and that's how it finished. So yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and I mean, the biggest part of it may be, having gone to two straight Super Bowls leading up to that, look, we wanted them to get to the Super Bowl, obviously, but to demand of your team that you have to get to three straight Super Bowls is really asking a lot. Of the same group of players, by the way. We're still talking about Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. You know, all those same guys, asking them to get to a third straight Super Bowl and, like, being seriously off-put by the fact that they didn't get it, I think it's just really asking a lot.
Okay, so let me ask you this, all right? Let me ask you this. If that loss was innocuous, is there a scenario where a loss in the playoffs this year is innocuous? Because obviously the expectations are high for this team.
Yeah.
But there's a large contingency of people that say that they're lucky that, you know, that they're not as good as their record says they are.
I think if you have a similar, I think the reason that one felt easier to swallow for people is that you were mounting a comeback, right? You were down in the first half.
At the end,
exactly. I think that the only way people feel that way about this year, and obviously it won't feel as good to fans as making it all the way, getting to a Super Bowl, but the only way I think people feel good about a playoff loss this year, should they get to the postseason, is if the way that they come back in the second half is by showing fans something they can be excited for next year. So if young defenders especially start stepping up and they can leave that game feeling like the biggest question they had all year was at least answered. Just came a little bit too late.
I would look at that as too. I know where you're going with that. And
I think that's the closest I can think of.
I would look at that as too little too late. Here's Pete Carroll in his weekly press conference.
Okay. We're deep in it now. Deep into the finish time. We got to get back on track with a really good week, really good preparation, going against a familiar opponent. She seems like these guys are in our division just about as we play them almost every year. And there's some changes this time around, but Panthers have always been tough. It's always been a great matchup for us, and so we got to get ready to go. Really like to finish road trips with a really good finish right here, and so we're putting everything we can into it. It's a big championship opportunity for us, and we've got to get right and do everything we can to make it, you know, a successful week here in practice, and then we'll take it to Sunday. So we're looking forward to it.
How's Ziggy Ansah doing?
Ziggy's practicing today. He's got a chance, real good chance to be okay, but he has to still prove it. You know, it's a strength issue right now.
You're going to go a little more than last week because of the longer rest of the days. You already walked through a little bit as opposed to last week.
Yeah, well, we'll know when we know. I haven't checked with the guys if they checked him out today yet, but he's practicing today, and so, like, he could do it last week, but he just wasn't able to play. So we'll find that out. Give us a couple days, and we don't need to hurry to that decision, rush to it.
How about Jadeveon?
He's sick today. Yeah, he got the flu thing. It finally hit him.
Still around.
I'm sure that's not what you asked.
Is it still going around? Is other players?
He's the only guy I know of right now.
Michael Kendricks, what's his status for this week?
He ran yesterday, and I think he's going again today. He won't practice today, so we have to wait and see all the way to the end of the week if he can make it back. hamstrings and ankles.
Chris hitting 1,000 yards again this year. Just when you have that kind of running back, kind of the physical workhorse type running back, what does that mean to a team? Just like maybe that.
It means a great deal to us. It always has. You know, to have a running back that has the attitude that we like to exhibit and the mentality. Chris has been exactly that. You know, we've had pretty good style in our running backs over the years, and Chris has really generated the consistency. You know, to come back-to-back and do that, that's tremendous work. And it's been a trying year for him. You know, he's had to challenge, had to get his way back into the rhythm of things and all that, but he's done it well, and he certainly has maintained the attitude that really stands for all of us. You know, when he's carrying the ball, we're proud to see him run, and the defense takes great pride in that as well as the offense. And you know, the big guys up front, they're really proud of the fact that he was able to come back again and get 1,000 yards, and because those are the guys that had to make it happen, and so they all share that.
How much interaction have you had with Rivera over the years?
Not very much. League meetings and stuff like that. You know, we've been friendly for a long time, but not very much.
Are you surprised, or are you beyond surprised at what coach?
No, yeah, I'm surprised. He's done a great job. He's been a successful coach, and he's a good ball coach, obviously. He's proven that. So, you know, but they got to make their decisions and all that, but somebody's going to get a good ball coach.
With Rashad, is there any more damage beyond just the ACL?
There's some other stuff that they'll look at when they get in there. They are going to do surgery. He will have surgery, and so we'll. You know, that he's not going in immediately. They're going to let it quiet down before they do that. It's a long haul to get him back. So we're going to take all the right precautions to make sure we start the process at the right time. But they got to get in there and find out what's going on. But it's an ACL damage that mainly they're concerned with.
What do you need to see from Homer to get him reps in the game?
We're ready to go, really. He has been a fantastic contributor on special teams, and he's worked throughout the year with us. We don't have any hesitation. He will have a chance to get the ball this weekend. CJ's going to step right into the two role and work with alternating with Chris, and Homer's alive and ready to go too. So I'm really happy for CJ. He's had the numbers just got him all during the middle part of this season. He's a really capable player. We love the way he plays and the way he's been practicing. He's been healthy throughout to give himself a chance, but he's been frustrated too, you know, and likely fashion he should be. But he's ready to go. And so it just kind of gives us the chance to think that, you know, let's get Homer some shots too. And so if the opportunity arises, we're going to do that.
Be able to maintain that yards per carry average?
He's going to work at it. You know, he's set the bar very high.
When CJ's going right for you, what is it about what he does that stands out and fits right for him?
Well, if you go back to CJ's background, you know, he was a receiver in college. You know, he was a DB first, and then he was a receiver. And I think he caught 50 passes or something his sophomore year or whatever it was back there before he became the running back. Maybe it was his junior before, you know, his last year. And he was a regular, you know, and he caught the ball down the field running all the routes and the whole stems and route trees and all that stuff and did fine at it. So that has always been just a factor for us that we've always, you know, we look to him to add that to the offense. And so he's got some stuff that's a little unique in that regard.
With Penny, is it a knee reconstruction then?
I don't know that. I don't know if that's the phrase. I can't help you on that one.
Does it look like it's beyond the beginning of next season?
No, I would never say that right now. No, I don't know how many months we got, but it's going to take him a while.
What did you think of how Cody Barton played, and is he going to be healthy then?
Yeah, Cody's going today. You know, he's a little banged up in the game, but he came back and got back in. He is just kind of like denying being hurt, and you know, it's just not even, it's not there. So we'll see how he does during the week. He played really hard. He had some kind of classic first time shots, you know, where he misjudged a couple blocks, you know, and being on the edge and a couple routes in the flat, you know, that he could have jumped a little bit better. So it's just, you know, getting to the game speed thing that you know, he'll be better this week, and he's going to pick up on every little tip that he can get to improve and help us out, and anxious to see him play again.
Plus 11 in turnover differential now. You guys obviously led the league last year. Do you have a going into your specific number or target on that stat?
You got to get the double digit sometime. We made it a week ago. That's the first kind of marker, and so we made it to double digits, and now we got to push it. You know, with 3 weeks left, you know, it's out there. But you know, we're trying to get 3 a week. So let's get to 20. Is the next one. You know, but you got to get 12 before you get, you know, all the way up there. So It's a big deal to us, though, and our guys are really tuned into it, and it's the contribution of both sides that makes this happen. But guys have been hawking the football really well, and we got to keep it going.
It's very likely that someone from your division is going to be on the road for the first playoff game, while someone from the NFC East is, you know, under 500 or around 500. You guys have obviously been beneficiary of that before. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about how the playoffs are seeded according to record versus division.
Absolutely not. I have none. We just keep playing and see what happens. We'd love to play at home. That's what we're playing for, to get the opportunity to play here. We know how we play when we're here that time of year, and so that's everything to shoot for. And other than that, I don't care, and I don't know, really.
Did you get a sense that maybe some guys weren't as up for that game on Sunday as they needed to be?
No, I wasn't. No, it had nothing to do with that. We got out executed early in the game. They were going faster than we adjusted, and it just took us too long to get going. And then we never caught up on offense either. You know, they played great. I thought it was a really well played game by them in all phases, even the penalties and the whole thing. You know, other than the turnovers, they played, you know, near perfect. And we needed to be at that level, and we weren't. You know, they were. You got to give them credit.
Speaking of being late to the adjustments, did that surprise you, given the veteran experience at linebacker?
Yeah, there was a couple. There was a couple things that happened, you know, that got us off, and there's enough newness that kind of contributed to it. So, but they did better than we did, and we had prepared for the tempo and all of that, and we just got out executed in it.
Cody Barker.
He was part of it. Yeah, he had to, you know, he had to make his alignments and stuff like that. It happened really fast. That's part of it. And then worrying about the new guys, you know, and so it wasn't as good as we needed to be. So we just have to eat it. There's nothing I can tell you other than that we didn't do it well enough.
Kind of following up on Joe's question, Shaquille Griffin made a comment that insinuated that maybe he thought they were a bit cocky. He mentioned getting knocked off their high horse going into that game. Did you kind of sense that at all?
Well, this league will humble you, you know. You know, you get caught up in it, it can humble you. The teams are so good, and it doesn't matter what their record is. It's just that day. And that's always been the case. And so you have to stay on it, and you have to stay ahead. And you know, I think I mentioned it to you. You know, we've had some really good clubs that got humbled late in the year, too, you know. And hopefully that helps us, you know, to make sure that we don't allow for any – you know, any latitude at all that can get us and give somebody else an edge on us. We were jacked to play. I mean, the whole week was a great week. We were looking forward to it. The night before, in that cruddy locker room that you're in there, we still held on to it and did all the things we needed to do. So I'm giving them credit. They looked great the week before, and they carried it over to our game too. Next week, let's go.
What do you make of what Josh Gordon's done so far, and is there room for growth in his role?
Sure. Yeah, Josh has had, you know, huge games in the past, and he just hasn't got the ball enough yet to show that for us, but he's done really well. Josh has been a, you know, really good guy around here and practicing and working hard and studying. There's a few calls in that game that he had shots at that the ball didn't get to him, and he was there. You know, he ran the right route, and we were open, and we just, you know, didn't get there because of other issues. But we're counting on him to be, you know, he could have a big game anytime.
Christian McCaffrey is obviously having a huge year. Just in terms of trying to slow them down on offense, how much does it start with him?
He's a great player. You know, he was a great player in college. I remember sitting at the combine in the evening, sitting down with him, just one-on-one with him, and I was really excited to talk to him because I was so impressed with him as a college player, and I kind of wanted to see if he had that kind of twinkle in his eye about being great. He left no doubt, and I was blown away by his mentality, and then to see him perform at such a high level so consistently, and he's good at everything, and he's, you know, he's the best combo guy there is. 86 catches he's got right now. I don't know, it's third or fourth in the league, whatever it is, as well as 1,200 yards. I mean, it's crazy numbers. But he brings it, and he runs tough, and he's good in the open field, and he makes the catches and runs the routes, and he's an incredible player. So the answer is, yes, it is built around him. It should be. They figured that out. It wasn't hard to figure it out. And he's been incredible in his first couple years in the league.
How did you tell that about him in that conversation you had?
Well, there was just a couple things that were said that I was challenging him to figure it out for me to figure it out. And I walked away really, really impressed. That's enough. I don't do too much there. Well, he's been up and down a little bit. You know, he came out and made a great start and struggled a little bit lately, but he's got the throws and he's got all, they have all of the actions, and they believe in him because they give him the opportunities to throw the ball down the field and do all the stuff, so they know that he can do it. He's got a really good group around him. Both Samuel and Moore, those guys are really good. And when Greg's playing too, and 22 back there, they got all kinds of firepower. So this is it's a good club, you know. And you know, over the years, we've always had great respect for them. And when Cam was playing, but we've seen the good that Kyle can bring them. They're very formidable because of all of the ways they can attack you.
When you look at your pass rush, what's it going to take to get back to, you know, what you guys had in, you know, Philly and San Francisco, especially when you look at the injuries that, you know, Jadeveon and, you know, Ziggy are dealing with? Like, how do you kind of get back to where you want?
We just got to keep working. We got to keep working our combinations of guys and try to take advantage of the ops when the guys are healthy and when they're doing right, and mix, keep mixing. We'll need more from Griff. Griff can help us some, and LJ, got to see if he can help us some too when those guys aren't, other guys aren't available. Cover right, you know, so that we allow the rush to get there, pressure well, you know, so that we can give our guys a chance to cause the problems with the additional guys rushing. Our linebackers can, you know, can cause some problems too. You know, Michael Kendricks has been a good blitzer for us, and he's, you know, we miss him not being a big factor. So, you know, Cody did a nice job a couple times he had. So it's everybody has to contribute to help us get better.
Pete, where is Tyler Lockett health-wise now compared to where he was in the Niner game? Is he back to where he was before he got hurt?
Yeah, I think he's really back. I thought he felt really good last week, and he's going into this week raring to go. He's fine.
Doing.
He's chomping at the bit to play this week. He's politicking. He like those guys in Washington D.C. He is working it, and so give him credit. He wants to play in the worst way, and he ran well today. He was really pumped up about it. He told me at least four times how well he looked in his workout. So he's working at it.
How's Nick Ballard?
Nick's got a chance to come back. He's going to practice today, and we're thinking that Nick, if he makes it through the week, we'll wait to determine that. But he should be able to play for us. That's a big plus for us coming back. He's been a real factor in teams, and a real good factor for us. So we're looking forward to him coming back.
What does Ryan Neal bring to you now that you've seen
him? Done a good job with us. We saw him back in his Atlanta days on film playing, and really liked his toughness and aggressiveness and confidence that he played with. He's done that here for us. He's done a really good job. He has, as the young guys have to do, they got to get captured by the special teams guys. Don't mean to put you to sleep there. He's done that. You know, it made a great impression. So he steps right in for us. You know, he's going to take Nico's spot, and he'll be on special teams and all of that, and really we're grateful that we've had the chance to build him up and prepare him and make him, you know, one of our guys. So I'm anxious to see him play.
You mentioned Russell. You'd like to see him get the ball out a little quicker, at least from Sunday. Is there anything else about his production that you'd like to see improve since over the last month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like him to be able to throw for 300 and about four touchdowns a week. You know, we'd like that to happen. So he could do a little bit better, and we need to help him. We need to contribute. You know, yeah, we'd like the production. If we run the ball for, you know, 180 or something, 200, and he throws it 20-something times, I don't care, you know, as long as we play well. And we're not worrying about the ends all, but it'd be nice if it happens. I guess that's kind of how you ask that, you know.
You guys have faced some pretty good defensive lines over the last few weeks. Thank how you, would you grade Joey Hunt's performance?
I enjoy doing really well. Joey has really held up his own. Like we said from the start, you know, his smarts is really a plus. He has been in command of what's going on up there. We have not taken a step back at all. And he's done a nice job. Joey's got different strengths than Justin Britt does. You know, he's got different makeup, and his ability to get downfield in the second level blocking has been really noticeable. So he's doing fine. And I'm really pleased that he's been able to pull that off.
Anything else? Thank you.
See you guys.
Joey Hunt relying on those smarts. I got to say, when Pete was talking about Joey Hunt, before he actually took the field and was going, every time he was asked about Joey Hunt, he would talk about his smarts. So I was like, oh, God, here we go. That's the only thing he can say about this guy. And you know what? He has held his own out there.
He has.
100%.
But also, I don't think that you were reading that wrong, Tom. I think in that building, they were nervous about what Joey Hunt could do. And you got to remember, the game that he was going to make his first start was against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who had Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea, two of the best interior linemen in the NFL. And he did great, and he's done well. He's had moments where he's gotten put on his back a couple different times in pass protection, but for the most part has played really, really well. And the thing that he pointed out was his ability to get to the second level. That means to the linebackers. When you're talking about combination blocks and those, if you can get to the second level, you can get to the linebackers. That's where some of the bigger explosive runs start to happen. And so that's a critical and very good skill to have. And when you look at the big picture, it's really interesting to see the situation moving forward into next year. I don't know if Joey Hunt is the guy that you want to rely on to be your every down starter next year, but it makes you wonder what's going to happen with Justin Britt, because Justin Britt is a leader of this team. He is a heart and soul, physical, tough guy. But the realities of the business of the NFL is he's going into his last year of his contract. He's going to the Seahawks could save $9 million if they ended up cutting him to the cap. So you just wonder how some of those things are going to shake out ultimately. And Joey's giving them something to think about.
We're going to react to some of the other things that Pete said there. Is Tyler Lockett back, or is he really back? We'll discuss it next. 710 ESPN Seattle.